you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Judy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Nick. It's lovely to be with you today.
I'm looking forward to this one. And let's start off today with something we were just discussing offline. But you were telling me how a lot of us recognize the importance of our physical DNA, but there's another equally important level.
Absolutely. And that's your emotional DNA, your patterns of thoughts, feelings, actions, inactions, and you inherit your emotional DNA just as much as you inherit your physical DNA. Now, your physical DNA, you can't always do something about, but your emotional DNA is where the sweet spot is because you can make magic there.
And we will be discussing this at length today, what exactly that means and some of the science and research behind it. But before we do, what are the non-negotiables you've done so far today for your health, your performance, and your bioharmony?
Walked. Made absolutely sure every morning for me, the non-negotiable is starting the morning in gratitude and really just kind of going through the whole body and the whole mind thing. And eating a really good, nice, healthy breakfast, lots of fruit.
Mm. Simple but powerful. Well, let's dig into what we were just talking about. What is the emotional DNA and how does that compare to our physical DNA?
Okay, so your emotional DNA is your inherited patterns of thoughts, feelings, actions, everything that came before you that's formed who you are now. And you can inherit it one of a number of ways. One is epigenetically, so there's an event that creates an imprint on the system that then becomes a blueprint for generations of behaviors, ways we think, mindsets, limitations, and then role models, sentences, all the things we've heard and the meanings we've made. And that's our emotional DNA. So, of course, we think we've got free will, but we really don't. 80% to 90% of the time, all we're doing is reliving ancient history and pretending it's new, and we have a predictable future.
And some of it is actually ancient, as in from previous generations, and some of it is from our own lives, our childhood, or even our adult lives.
Yeah. In other words, the generations of you, right? Because these days, if you look at it, we're not just living one life like we used to before. We're living many lives in one life and many iterations. And so, yeah, if people don't have access to their genealogy, what I say to them is sit down and timeline your whole life. And then start to look at the patterns and the things that you tell yourself, the thoughts you have, the feelings you have. And you're going to see that there are patterns and they're saying, look at me, because we're clues to your super being.
Well, when you were doing your research for your book, how did you come across the concept of epigenetics and what stood out to you and led you to doing more research and diving deep on this subject that only started getting attention in the last, what, two decades?
Absolutely. And I think it's kind of been quite closely linked to systemic work. I think what drew me to it was the study of the Great Dutch Hunger Winter. And that's the one where they had the whole city was a ring around by the Nazis. And then they studied that group as an intact group and discovered that the PTSD pieces had resulted in eating abnormalities that showed up either as malnutrition or as obesity with psychological pieces as well. But it wasn't just for that generation. They could find it four generations down and counting. And then the same thing happens with the Holocaust. And then more recently with 9/11, they showed elevated PTSD markers in women who'd been pregnant with children at the time, but their children have them too. And so it becomes pretty clear that something's going on. And that something is very powerful because you can use that to change what's in your body. You can choose it, at least use it to change what's in your life. And the patterns are really, as I said before, they're deep clues as to what wants to stop and what's going, hey, time to start a new chapter.
Yes.
I first came across the concept of epigenetics, which, to summarize in layman's terms, if you have your genes, people say that those are what, quote, loads the gun, and your epigenetics are what pulled the trigger.
Exactly right.
I had never heard of epigenetic trauma until I came across an author named, and I don't know if he's, what kind of work in the psycho-spiritual world he does, but his name is Mark Wulin, and he wrote a book called It Doesn't Start With You. And he was talking about how he would work with certain clients, and they would say certain words, and those words would help him discover and help them discover where these traumas possibly originate from. And then by working with them through these traumas, they were able to release and overcome these lifelong patterns that they didn't even realize existed, and transform their lives from a couple therapy sessions.
Exactly. And so what you're referring to there is systemic work and constellations, and that's the work that I do. Now, he sits, I think, a fair amount on the trauma side. I sit on the trauma and transformation side, because what happens is, you're exactly right, we listen to the language. I had somebody, not even a couple of days ago, who said to me, when they use this tone, I'm scared I will be killed. I'm going to die. They're going to decimate me. And I said to him, okay, stop. That's really big language. Where does that come from? And we worked with it. And it goes back to one of the great world wars. And it comes from a great grandfather, but it's echoed all the way through to him. And he carries it as though it were his own. And he said to me, I said to him, you're going to find that it'll present everywhere. It's trying to get your attention, because there is war, and there is war in your home. And it's asking you, can we now have peace? But until you can see the war, you cannot have peace. And he started to laugh, and he said to me, do you see all these books behind me? I've never understood why I'm so attracted to reading about the Second World War. Now I know. And it was all there. And so it was a question of, could he say to his great-grandfather, I know you were almost killed. I know you felt decimated. For you who couldn't be present, watch me as I can. And so it's turning that around. And it flips it very quickly. Sometimes it's not even a couple of sessions. Sometimes it's in the constellation, in the moment. And if you know what you're doing when you work with somebody, you can watch them rewiring. You'll see that visceral jolt. And then they will literally say to me, wait, I can't think the same thoughts anymore. I'm thinking something different. What, my body feels different. So it's an embodied experience, because you're engaging sight, hearing, touch. And so that gives you that multi-sensory input, and it jolts through the body, and it grounds as a different pattern. And if you keep working with that, now it wires that different pattern into your body. So you're putting down the pattern that no longer serves. It's a source of wisdom. And you're starting the chapter that only you can write, which is what the system needs.
Yeah. If you had told me this 2 years ago, it would have been way over my head, and I would have written it off as out of this world, not possible, because I haven't experienced any capital T traumas that I'm aware of. And it seems far-fetched that my little t traumas could be really pulling the strings of my life. And this is one level beyond that. Like, something that didn't even happen during my life could be presenting itself and making me act out in certain ways that I might just take as like a core part of my personality, who I am. Like, I have these reactions to these things because that's who I am. So how do you like add color to this, and maybe some like real world like tests or things people can do to figure out if what they're experiencing is coming from them and it's really who they are and who they are destined to be, or if it's coming from an ancient external source that they should then be looking into this work?
Okay, so practical steps. If there is a place, maybe it's money, maybe it's relationships, leadership, whatever it is, where you really struggle and you're annoyed and you're frustrated and you get stuck in the same place over and over again, chances are, if you can't explain it, you're looking at a multi-generational pattern. So what you want to do is sit down, let's say it was money. Sit down and write down everything that you think about money. and then everything you feel about money, and all the actions you take around money. And then you ask yourself, when did that first start for me? What was happening in my life at the moment? Is there anybody else in my family who has a similar pattern? And if there is, you now know you're looking at, okay, I'm very faithfully repeating a pattern. And it's going to feel intense for you, because what it's doing is it's saying to you, time to look, time to look, time to look, time to look. It wants you to look so that you can begin to change it. Now, the other piece that's important, so that's a pattern trying to stop. The other piece of that puzzle that's super important is you sit down and you look at something like money and you go, you know, everybody in my family, it's easy come, easy go, but we don't really have a lot. I'd love to have a nice, bright, rosy financial future, but that's in our family, that's not who we are. You're already telling yourself. So, and then you say, but I'd really like to have some of those nice things. I would like to build a relationship with money, because by the way, money is a relationship, not a commodity. So that's another whole new piece too. And then you look at it and you go, I look at mom, I am not going to be like that. I'm going to build a nest egg. You're busy changing it. So, and then it gets exciting, because when you do that, you go, hey, I've got 1,000 in, I've got 2,000 in. Well, I don't want to be a millionaire, because you know, those people are greedy. And then my challenge to people always is, but what could you do with that? So you look at that and go, ooh, I could do this and this and this. And I could, but that's the pattern that's trying to emerge through you. It's asking you to change the flavor of money as it is. And this is how your entire life is shaped. You're most often reacting to old patterns, and the system is saying to you, hey, please take me to the next level. You're the one who writes the next chapter. So it's really about you and the mindsets and that you will create. But you've got to do it in such a way that your brain can tell your body a story that the body believes, because that's the trick of manifesting and that's the trick of the next chapter.
Mm. Yeah, we will talk about that. But the first thing that I was thinking when you were speaking just now is you mentioned basically that if you feel stuck at any point, that's an indication that there might be something behind that. And everyone feels stuck regarding something.
Exactly. Exactly. So each one of us has got this push-pull from the system. A system is designed for you to grow. It's designed for you to want. And people are taught to not want, which is exactly the opposite of human evolution. You must want, and so you will move. So it looks to show you, hey, you're stuck. Am I irritating you enough yet? Are you annoyed enough, and are you ready to get sick and tired of being sick and tired? Because then we can play.
So the other thing that was coming through just now when I was reflecting on this is that if I feel stuck in one place and I probably feel stuck in another place, perhaps my personality is just an amalgamation of a bunch of these old patterns. And my question to you is, what lies on the other side of this work? Once I address these and give those parts of me space and healing, what do I gain out of it?
Okay, so here's what happens. You suddenly move out of being a victim, out of being stuck, and you begin to realize that you are a very big being. In fact, on my website, it asks, how big are you willing to be? And people often say to me, isn't that a little egotistical? And I say, no. The day you agree to be the biggest version of yourself is the humblest day of your life. It's the first time that you agree to be responsible for growing the full potential of your life. And now you're in service of the system and the universe. So what's on the other side of this is suddenly you find you're doing more of what you really love and like. And guess what? It's not selfish. It's serving everybody. Suddenly you realize you have a darn big adventure and you were put here, or you chose to come here to accomplish something amazing. And suddenly you realize that there is another language in the world other than suffering and being small. And it's called, you are a limitless super being. Go there. That's what's on the other side.
Yeah. And there's certainly humility there, that when you admit that who you are currently showing up as isn't ultimately all you, hasn't been all in your own control because of who's come before you, your lineage, that's like just surrendering a bit in a healthy way. And it's the opposite of egotistical, like you said.
It really is. And there's another piece to that as well. It's when you can look at your family system exactly the way that it is and agree to it exactly the way that it is. You can mine the wisdom from it. You can thank it because it took all of that to create you. And then your job is to create purpose for what's come before you. If there was sadness, am I joy? If there was lack, am I abundance? Who am I in this? What will I add, not just to the system, but to the world and to the universe? Because everything that you do is adding to the collective, everything. So are you adding junk or are you adding value? And the more value you add, it's interesting. I think you become more and more aware that it's all about you. It's not about you. And it's all about you. So it's all about you because you're here and you're experiencing. It's not about you because it came from many, many generations. But it's all about you. What will you do with this?
Holding the tension and the polarity of opposites.
Exactly. It's a brilliant journey to be on. Honestly, once you stop being the victim, and there are really good reasons sometimes to be that, but not really, not to stay there. It's a very, very attractive world.
That's actually what I was going to ask you next. And that is, for every positive choice we make, there are consequences and drawbacks and other sides of the coin. And if living the victim lifestyle, following that archetype, is reducing our burden, making things easier for us, like, what are some of the other reasons that people stay comfortable and avoid confronting this whole other world?
So I think it's because you have an unconscious loyalty. So take the money thing. Everybody does it this way, me too. Or somebody who's suffering, everybody suffered, me too. There is a deep unconscious loyalty to many of those patterns because it allows us to belong in our group. And our feeling is, if I don't do that, I won't belong and then I'll be excluded. But the reality is, you can never not belong. All you're doing is you're stepping ahead and you're saying, come look. Because think about it. If you step ahead and you discover something, what's the first thing you want to do? Turn around and share it. Absolutely. So I keep saying to people, don't be afraid of that. But we're so conditioned to belong in the group exactly the way that we should. It's we call it a systemic trance. We know it may not be good for us, but it's just so much easier. And the other thing is, unless you've seen something like systemic work and constellations, where you literally stand in the system and you see it, hear it, feel it, and you see the invisible and you experience the unconscious, you don't know what you're looking for or what's missing. But once you begin to learn how systems work and how to literally see, feel, hear the unconscious and make it visible, well, yeah, now there's no turning back because you've moved through a door and that's no longer able to be closed.
Well, Judy, we've danced around the topic of systemic work and constellations a bit now. That's going to be a new term for a lot of folks. Can you dig into that and explain what exactly it is and why it matters?
Sure. So systemic work, first of all, why it matters. I think the world largely is in the great sleep of the victim. And it keeps us really stuck in ways that are unpleasant. And systemic work is the study of you within a system. So you, Nick, didn't just become you. You didn't just walk in and go, here I am. You were the result of all of those generations before you. And it's a study of you within those generations, who you are now, how you came to be, what the effects were, where they came from, what it's done to you, and what it will still do if you don't change and if you do change. So that's systemic work. We look at where you may be stuck or where you may be thriving and how to either elevate that or to shift stuck so that you are thriving. It's all, at all times, it's an elevation piece. And it's an unsticking piece. So it matters. It's one of the ways in which you can logically, yet very deeply and transformatively, start taking your life up levels and quickly. So it matters. What is a constellation? It's a really breakthrough approach. I use it in Fortune 50 and 500 companies for problem solving, and I use it for individuals and at all of my live events. And so what you do is somebody will come and sit down next to you and say, okay, here's what I want to explore. And we identify the parts of that issue. So what are the parts of the puzzle? Then we choose live representatives for each one of those parts. And you ask the client to place those representatives in relationship to one another. So now you have this spatial depiction of what's going on. And that's the first thing that people go, whoa, they've never actually literally seen it in front of them. But now they can see all of these moving parts, and they're already having insights and looking at the connections and the disconnect. So that's the first thing. And then we start using that language that you were referring to early on. So what do you say about that? Well, I tell myself I'm stupid. When did that begin? My teacher told me I was stupid, or my father was stupid. So your father was told he was stupid. Yeah, okay. So now we look and we've got the representatives, and here's the piece that also blows people's minds. If you look at a program like The Voice or American Idol, you know when you watch somebody really hit their stride, you get goosebumps, right? You sit there going, whoa, you've just sensed into their system. And we're very capable of doing that all day long. In fact, that's how we interact. But we haven't been taught that this is a powerful function. In constellations, what happens is you will see somebody turn around and say something, and the client goes, wait, how did they know to say that? They're sensing into the system. Or why are they moving like that? That's exactly what my father used to do. So people are pretty accurate. They're standing in what we call the knowing field, the field, the collective conscious of all of those who came before, and it begins to interact with you. And as we use the words, you'll see things like somebody who comes in and says to me, I think I shared this one with you, I'm not worth much. All I ever got were little drops of love. And I had this with a client. I only ever got, and she kept saying, little drops of love. And when we explored and we looked at her parents, I said to her, where did they come from? What's the story? And she said, well, they were from, you know, they're Holocaust survivors. And I said, whoa, hold on. So they're very unemotional and you just get little drops of love. Yeah. What are you like as a mother and as a wife? I'm huge. I'm very loving. I have so much. And I said, so how do you think you don't belong? Do you not see what you did? You took the little drops and what have you made? And she went, oh, I belong. So it's shifting that perception and using those words, which, by the way, all day long, you're tattling about yourself and your system. Everything you say is talking about who you are. But often you don't realize the power or the magic of what you're saying. Her little drops of love have become great big oceans of love, and she hadn't seen it. So she'd taken this little and she'd grown it into something. Or you see somebody who says, I'm useless. My father was useless. There's a better one than that. A gentleman who came and who said to me, I'm terrified. I'm about to get promoted to lieutenant colonel. And I said, okay, so the terrified is because, you don't understand. I can't. I'm a major. I have to be a major. Now, when somebody's that dogmatic, that's the other place I look. When it's, you look there because they're actually guarding or keeping something that's in the system. So I said to him, tell me about your dad. Well, he was a major. Okay. And your grandfather, he was a major. Okay. And great-grandfather, he was the original major. And he said, that's good enough for everybody in the family. And I said, okay. So now we know what's going on, right? You can't move further because great-grandfather said, we don't go past being a major. But that was then. And can you tell him now, because of you and all of these other majors, I get to give you all a legacy. I'm about to take the next step. And that he could do.
Mm-hmm. How did you know in that case that his dad was the one he needed to, like that was the place to look?
So typically what I'll do, if you looked at the whole process, what happened was he was standing here and I had a representative for him, a representative for mom, for dad, and for the promotion. So we even use representatives for aspects or pieces like a promotion. And what I did was I said to them, I want you all to follow your movements. If anybody needs to move, please do. And his representative went right over to his father and stood next to him. And I said to him, is that accurate? And he said, oh, yes, I'm very close to my father. And I said, okay. And how was he with his dad? Oh, very close to his dad. And then out came the story. And so what we did ultimately was, so if you can get this visually, what I then did was I said to him, okay, I want you to feel this. And he said, okay. I said, turn around. And I want you to back up. And I had his father put his hands on his shoulders and his grandfather put his hands on the father's shoulders and the great-grandfather put his hands on the grandfather's shoulders. And then I got them to push him forward and say, do better than we. And he said to me, I really got that. I could feel that. And he said to me, I'm good now. I can take that step. It felt not allowed. So I said to him, so do you need their permission? And he said, no, I think I got this. But often what you'll see is somebody needs permission to move because the prior generation is still here and they're going, well, but if I do better than you, do I still belong? So it's that untangling and the real acknowledgement of they set the stage. It's okay for me to run.
Are constellations always family systems or do they sometimes have outside influences that are nothing to do with the family?
So let me answer it in two ways. Sometimes you get a pure organizational constellation, and I do quite a lot of those. If they have a problem, what we do is we go in and we actually set it up with papers. If you don't have representatives, you can set it up in a specific way using paper, and you dimensionalize it that way. And so what you look at is what is the pattern that's off or needing to change in the organization? Now, it can be purely organizational. Very often it belongs to someone. And when it belongs to someone and you trace it back to maybe it's the CEO or the CFO or somebody who was fired unjustly, if you look at their history, you'll see that it also comes from their family system. So the answer is yes and yes.
How can we practice this at home? I'm sure it takes and a professional like yourself to be able to really get some of the deeper, harder to observe patterns. But are there some simple constellation exercises we can do at home to like flesh out the smaller or more obvious patterns?
Yeah, well, there are a couple of things you could do that are also going to teach you to sense into a system. So one of the ones I like to say to people is, if you take three pieces of paper, on one you write my family, on the next one you write my career, and on the one of the others, you write church, sports, another system, okay? And then what you do is you put them down left to right and you back away from them. And starting with the first one, you walk towards it and notice, what do you tell yourself about that? What are you thinking about that and feeling about that? And how close can you get to that system? And you do it with each one, and you're going to notice that you'll stop at different points. You might get super close to this one, a little further from this one, right on top of that one. Your body knows. The body is a really accurate compass. We just don't always know to use it. So this begins to sense the system. The next thing you want to do is, if you want to explore an issue you have, identify the parts. Put it on a piece of paper with an arrow at the top because that gives you a directional piece of paper. And now place them in relationship to each other and then start walking from one to the other. And again, what am I telling myself? What am I thinking? What am I feeling? What are my actions? And people go, it can't be that simple. And I say to them, okay, let's try. And we do it just with the three systems. I say, so why'd you stop 2 yards away from that one? Well, I'm not going close to that. You know, that's that family lot. Mm-mm-mm-mm. And I go, so you know this. The body knows. Oh, I could go all the way close to that one. Why? Because I really have an affinity. I belong here. How do you know? Well, I know. The gut knows. The gut is a very accurate inner compass. So when you teach yourself to do that, it's simple things like, if you want to see who you are in your family, write down mom, dad, sibling, me, and then place them in relationship to each other and start looking. Am I the one always in the middle? Am I always on the outside looking in? Am I closer to mom? Am I further away from dad? Is dad looking in or is he looking out? And if he's looking out, why is he looking out? Did he get lost at war? Did he never come home again? What about mom? She's looking down. What's going on down there? Did she lose someone? Is there a guilt? So you begin to show yourself what lives in your system. The more you do that, the more familiar you become with systems, and you will not look at things the same way again. You won't even look at the news the same way again.
Can you explain that last one again for me? Because what I understood is you write down the names on some paper and then you like role play.
No. So what you do is you put down mom, dad, sibling, you, right?
And then put it down on paper.
On papers, different pieces of paper. And then you position them the way that it is for you. So maybe you put dad further away because dad's always further away. Maybe you put mom in the middle and your sister here and you're over here. You're actually giving yourself information that you usually just have here. But now you're seeing it and you probably have a feeling about that. And you're hearing yourself. And then people will say to me, oh, that's right. I'm always on the outskirts. That explains why I'm always on the outskirts at work too. So now that the minute you can see it and hear it and touch it, even standing on that paper, it starts to give you that multi-sensory input. And when you have that, you're going to make very, very different decisions. You're going to have different insights. The minute we do that, you can watch people. If I do that at an event, they start to jolt and jump. And they're like, whoa, I've never seen that before. Or I never realized that. No, because you've been doing it here. But when you can see it in front of you and interact with it, that's a whole new ball game.
So what this is doing, it's taking information we're receiving and assimilating and even generating from a bunch of different places, not just the mind, but the gut, the heart, the soul, the spirit. And then it's putting it into a sensory form of information that we can very easily digest and make sense of in a way we can't when we're trying to read it from a bunch of different places at once.
Absolutely. It's really helpful because you're literally making the unconscious conscious and the invisible visible. I will do that with people and they'll go home and say to their mother, you know, that was really odd. We had Uncle so-and-so off over there, and the mother will say, but that's how it was. Oh. So we're finding information that we never knew because you can't get it all in here. When it's here, you have no sense of the interactions of the different members or of their space or their orientation. Are they in? Are they out? What's happening? And so it begins a much different conversation and a much deeper one.
I don't remember the exact story, but I remember hearing something about a family passing down a recipe and them having a special way that they always prepared it. And then one day the son questioned, or the sibling questioned, why they were doing it that way. And the parent said it's because their parent did it that way. And when they trace it all back, it was because that was like the pan shape that they had available at the time.
That's it. I know the exact story you're talking about. The girl came in and said, I've just gotten married. I want to know how to do a roast. And I know my mother always cuts the one leg off. Yeah. And it came back. And this is it. We make meaning of things, but we don't check them out. And in constellations, you do check them out. Mm. Often I'll have somebody who says, my mother's never available to me. Never. She's never been available. She's just absent. And so we set everything up and suddenly mom looks down or drops to the floor. And I say to him, okay, hold on. Are there any things like miscarriages, stillbirths, adoptions? Oh, yeah, we lost two siblings. And I put a representative up for each one, and mom just goes down. And I said to him, do you now understand why mom is not available? And they go, you mean it wasn't me? No. And they get it. This is constellations are very much about not getting it. They get it. It internalizes and it begins to recreate a different pattern.
So this sounds more palpable than most things that are similar to this that I've tried previously. But I do want to push back a little, Judy, because when I think about this, it wasn't long ago that I feel that I had a form of what I call sensory biofeedback amnesia. I had a very hard time tuning into what my body was telling me, and I was very good at overriding my gut, my heart, what these things, these sensory organs were, and it's not sensory organs, but these organs, the information they were giving me. And so I feel like if you put up a paper right here or multiple papers, I would just walk straight to the front and touch all of them without noticing any changes.
And you could. And if you did, my question for you, if that happens, is what can I not see? What am I not willing to see? Who is not allowed to see? Who is not allowed to feel? But if you really, and you could do that with anything, but if you are really intentional and you go, okay, let me have a look. Let's just try this and see what happens for me. You're going to notice that there are differences. They may be small at first, but you will notice them. What you're saying is really accurate. Most of us aren't taught to use head, heart, gut. We're taught to use this. It's when we begin to understand that we have access to all of that, that everything changes. And I think there are other people who would tell you, I know for me, what my experience with people is, it's never that you have a closed mind. You have a closed heart. Mm-hmm. There's something's happened and you've gotten a fright. And when the heart closes, the frontal lobe can't see. It goes into survival mode. And so now we just interact very, you know, it's really not a deep connection. But it's when we have the moment of joy or the moment of there's got to be more than this, we move from transactional to transformational because the heart opens and the brain goes, oh boy, what are we going to go find here? And find something that it can use. When I work with people, I don't have that problem, by the way, because once they're in person, it's pretty much easier. But I do a lot of Zoom and, it's just teaching people to understand there are many parts of you you haven't been taught. Let's have fun. I have a CFO who said to me, come and sort my problem out. I don't want to do this crazy stuff. And so we do the whole thing. Turns out we do a constellation. He doesn't know till we finished. And I said to him, how do you know that's the right answer? He said, don't be stupid. I'm a CFO. I have gut. I said, ah, really? So you have gut. And he went, yeah. And I said, that's called sensing. And he went,
What I was just imagining is that I can't do that now. I'm much more sensitive to these things. And I don't know if it's because I'm living a healthier lifestyle, because I've developed a more like intense spiritual practice or what it is per se. But I think part of it before was I had a high degree of skepticism and possibly the nocebo effect. The negative placebo was stronger and outweighing those signals. So all I could perceive was what I wanted to perceive, which was that these things didn't work.
I like that because I love skeptics, by the way, because when they get it, they really get it. But here's the piece. Your being a skeptic may well in your family system have been a very wise safeguard so that you didn't get swindled, hurt, or any of those. So it could be that was in place going, don't be easily fooled. You know what happens when you get fooled. So it's been wise and helpful for you. And it's been a good answer. And there came a point at which you went, I really want to try some of that stuff too. And you were able to then switch and do that. So what was probably happening was you had a systemic safeguard. That's good. That's good.
One of the things that I like and value about myself is that I'm very curious, and I'm wondering if now that stems from somewhere else in my lineage. And is it possible that you don't want to undo and unravel some of these things that you actually like? Like, do I not want to trace it back?
Yeah, no, you may want to trace it back and build on it, because people come to me and they say, are we just going to look at the negative stuff? And I'm like, no. Uh-huh. What have you got that you really love? That's fine, but here's the deal. You don't get to get complacent with that. What is the chapter that you can add? They were good at this. They were really good at this. They were really, really good at this. How are you going to be excellent? So you don't want to get rid of those. In fact, often what I'll do is especially with parents, when people struggle with parents, what do you want to take from your parents that you have that's valuable and that you can build on? What do you want to leave with them that isn't helpful right now? And what addition will you make that comes from only you?
I like that. So I don't need to give up my secret sauce.
Don't give up your secret sauce. You don't want to do that. In fact, your secret sauce is half of your magic. When you, I always say to people, if you're stuck, what's your go-to sentence? What pulled you out of it? Where did that come from? Be aware that the system is always in service of you. It's either trying to get you to notice and change or notice and improve.
And I think once you start exploring these things, you also are much more likely to notice it in other people. For example, I have someone that's close to me that constantly uses the word irritation when something bothers them. And I'm like, there's got to be something there because it's not an occasional thing. It comes up every single time like clockwork. And I want to like gently suggest they look into it, but I don't know how to do that.
I'll tell you, that's a great one, because when somebody uses that language, that is systemic language. So if you don't notice that somebody's using the same word, or there's a real hot button word, or you want to say to them, I really notice that word irritation. It fascinates me. Where does that come from? When did you start using that? What first irritated? Who is there anyone else in your family who uses that? What was the original irritant? And the language is really important. I think I may have said to you, I had someone who came and who said, oh my goodness, I was almost decimated this morning. I nearly didn't survive a catastrophic encounter with my boss. And I'm like, what happened? Well, I was a little bit late coming to work, and then the boss was annoyed. And I was like, whoa, no, that language is not this language. Where is the catastrophe in your family? And she said, there is. Oh, yes, there is. My mother and I outran a volcano. My father and brother didn't make it. It's in the language. Everything we say is important. We're giving ourselves clues. The words are gold.
I have a feeling it won't be too far down the line in which AI can analyze our voice, and based on the specific words we use, it can trace us and plant us somewhere in a certain family tree.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Because what you've just touched on is this work is very much genealogy 2.0. So genealogy 1.0, here's where you belong. Genealogy 2.0, here's how all of those events and people matter and what it's doing to you. Genealogy 3.0, so what are you going to do with that?
I've heard you mention previously, and I guess in this conversation as well, that symptoms can be a gold mine. And in some ways that we're currently discussing, what do you mean by that? And why is it such an important part of your book?
Okay, so symptoms are a gold mine. What they're doing is they're pointing out a pattern. They're trying to point out that something's off kilter. Their job is to point you towards the pattern. So if you're you're always angry, that's a symptom of something. Where did it come from? What started it? Where did it first happen for you? What was happening in your life? What happened in your family's life that the anger sits there? I have people who are rageaholics, and when somebody is that big of a feeling or an emotion, I want to know, because if it's that big and it's disproportionate to what's happening, that's a systemic clue. It's telling you, I don't belong to just you. I belong to many, but I'm asking you to see me and give me a place so that I can rest and you can rest and do something different. So a symptom's going, I'm a clue. Look here. Hello. Because over generations, something's happened. It wasn't resolved. And the details of the event have gotten softer and faded, but the symptoms keep getting louder and louder and going, you need to see me.
Judy, I was also just thinking that a lot of the old ancient ancestral medicine practices, like traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, these tend to be, like, as they call themselves, like root cause medicines, where they're focused on addressing issues at the core. But these issues, our constitution is dynamic. And I'm now thinking that taking an herb to reduce liver fire or to cool your pitta fire, those are almost palliative, kind of like the Western medical approach. And yes, they're addressing that issue in a possibly more holistic and healthy way. But it sounds like even below that, the level below that, could have to do with your lineage. And if you work on this, your personality and like your constitution may be more dynamic than we're giving it credit for. So focusing on this, fixing this, or maybe just giving it attention, and all of a sudden these like lifelong who you are type things might change.
Very much. There are two things that you said that are important. One is the fixing it bit, and then the other piece. So the fixing it bit, what you're really doing is you are bringing stability and you're bringing normality back to the system. You're bringing balance. The other piece of that is once you bring balance, you now discover purpose. Because again, where there was sadness, can there now be joy? Where there was anger, can there now be peace? So really, you're playing multi-level games. You're restoring balance, and you're now off on an adventure. And this adventure it's waiting for you. It's exciting. It's asking you to take it on. So your purpose emerges often from this too.
That's beautiful. So if you're feeling stuck and like you're unable to figure out what you're doing, like where you want to go, you don't have a clear North Star, this kind of work can help you discover it.
It can absolutely. A lot of people say that. They say, got it. Now I know why I'm here. I know what I have to do. And that's not the entirety of it, but it begins the steps. So it begins that transformation piece. Instead of you being traumatized and now fixed, okay, that was step one. Now what? Mm-hmm. And the now what is this beautiful adventure, and all the clues are there saying, come on, go do this. And in fact, sometimes the adventure can also be tied back to generations before. You have somebody who says, I really, really want to become wealthy. But you know, in my family, we all struggled. And then we go looking and we find out, but hold on, great, great grandfather didn't struggle. He really did well. Then there was an event. You guys are all still loyal to that event, but you have the DNA of the great-great-grandfather. You may want to tune into some of that too. And what's happening is this one's saying, it's time for the flow to resume. It stopped here. I begin the flow again.
So this is mostly under the emotional DNA?
Yeah. This is emotional DNA, and it uses the systemic world and then constellations, because as I say, when you have that experience, not just reading, but you have that experience, it shifts a lot, and it shifts it pretty quickly. And it shifts it in a lasting manner too.
Okay. And then given this knowledge, what do we do to reset some of these old beliefs and patterns aside from just becoming aware of them?
Well, it's really to look at, so everybody in our family suffers. I don't like that. I don't want to do that anymore. For me, I'm going to start every day with a practice of gratitude. It may be for something just small, because don't forget, I've got 5 generations of suffering. So I'm very easily pulled into the suffering. But okay, but I really, really like the idea of excelling and doing well and just being this amazing. Okay, so you've got to make the adventure stronger than what has you here. So that's why I say write down the thoughts, feelings, and actions, then write down what you want here. But you've got to feel it so deeply that it's stronger than this. And you've got to continually get your brain to tell your body until your body feels the truth of this. And it's going to take a while. And for some people, it doesn't. For some people, they're so sick and tired of where they are. They look at that and go, and I'm done. And they will look at the system and go, I can't carry this anymore. Enough. It's time for us to do this, or it's time for me to. And they'll find something, and it's so exciting that it pulls them past all of those old reasons for staying stuck. So you want it to be exciting. Don't go for something that's too small. There's a guy, Michael Gerber, from the E-Myth, and he says, the trouble is not that you think too big. It's that you think too small. And when you think too small, you lack the fuel to get you all the way home. Think big.
It's a good book.
Big is good.
Yeah. One of the things I was just thinking of when you were mentioning that is a simple practice that I like to do. And for people who are skeptical of meditation or don't want to do it, it seems too complicated. My like simple toned down version that also I find works really well is to think of a future that you want in whatever way, and then to daydream it, but not just to daydream it, because that's good and all, but the secret is really to experience it as if it's already happening, like feeling all those feelings and eliciting that change, because it causes all kinds of biochemical cascades throughout the body. And it's super practical, super easy. Anyone can do it. It takes a little bit of practice to actually be able to feel different things on command. But it's one of those things you can pull out of your back pocket in a stressful situation, and you can modulate how you're feeling so that you respond to the stress rather than reacting to it.
That's perfect, because what you've just described there is your brain is telling your body a story that it can believe. And when it buys that, oh my goodness, my one for that was when I first came to the States, we went to Disney, and I looked at that and I thought, I looked at it and I went, one day, I want timeshare there, and I want to be able to bring my whole family, and I want to be the one walking out of there, not just looking with longing. And I took pictures of it, and every day I would look at that and go, one day. Well, I will tell you what, when one day happened, it is the best feeling in the world. I got to walk in there, I got to put the key in there, and I got to say to my family, it's teaching yourself to have dreams and make them come true. And that doing that, what you described, that's writing the chapter that only you can write. Nobody else gets to tell you how. It's got to be super, super beautiful, super joyful, super happy, whatever it is. Or maybe if you're ill, super healthy. It's got to be something that inspires you to be your very best self. And there is no way you're giving up on that.
And the beautiful thing about it is that you don't have to tell someone in your immediate circle and risk the ridicule or other things that can come along with it. It can be your little secret. And once it works one time and a second time, then you will just keep coming back to it.
Yeah, because you're building that winner effect. You're teaching yourself, I can, I can, I can. And so now what you're doing there, by the way, is you're using systemic language. Instead of everybody saying to you, well, you can't do that, it's stupid. And you go, yeah, it's stupid. You're going, I've got something you don't know about. And guess what? I can do this. And you're exactly right. The minute you do that, you get addicted positively. And you want that. Because now the head, heart, and gut are going, well, if I did that, now I'm going to see if I can do that. That's the adventure. That is the adventure. And that's what's beyond when you suffer.
I don't know if it's the UK or somewhere in Europe has what they call tall poppy syndrome, where you don't want to stand out because then you threaten. I say that in quotes because you're not actually threatening anyone, but you're threatening their status quo. How do you overcome that and also not like offend the people around you?
So yes, and all countries have different ones, right? One of the reasons this country does well is because it says I have the can do. And so people buy into that. So the tall poppy syndrome, when somebody comes at you, and people will, the minute you start to really get out there and you're growing and you're loving your life, somebody's going to have something to say. So with a tall poppy syndrome, when somebody comes at you and says, excuse me, but you've got tall poppy syndrome, what you want to do is look at them and say, you know what? I'm learning that in my world, all poppies can grow, and I'm just the first. So watch me. Do you want to come play? It's quite fun over here. Mm. All of those are limiting pieces, and they're limiting systemic sentences. I worked in Montreal with a group who told me, we want to do something very big. And I said, that's great. And the other guy kept saying, but remember, we're made for small bread and small crumbs. And I said to him, and that's why you're not getting anywhere. With a sentence like that, you keep hitting yourself in the foot. So what you described there is a systemic sentence. And what you want people to do is to go home and say, okay, so where do I shoot myself in the foot? What are the limiting things I tell myself about leadership, life, relationships, love, money, all of those? What are the ones that I tell myself that keep me small? Because that's where I need to be working. And by the way, it's not the truth. It's just their truth. And I can change it anytime I want to.
I think it's less so about people explicitly saying that. And it's more about just the way they treat you when they see you starting to excel, whether it's a promotion, it's you branching off and doing your own thing and straying from the pack. It's not necessarily the explicit words they use, but just the way the treatment changes.
But here's the deal. This is what happens. And I see this all the time in the work I do. So they treat you very badly because now you're not conforming. So you're not one of the pack. And now you're outside of the group. But here's what happens. You start excelling. And one or two are going to go, well, hold on. He's not dying. And in fact, he's doing quite well. And I like where he is. I think I'm just going to go try that too. And bit by bit, the better you do, the more the people are going to migrate and start following. It happens. I see that over and over. People will say to me, my family's never going to do this stuff. And I go, okay. And then I see all of their family come trickling into the event. And I go, so what are you doing here? Well, I don't know what she was doing, but it was working. So we want to come see too. You just got to keep walking and have faith.
That definitely strikes home for me pretty well.
Yep. And everybody's going, well, wait a minute. Why isn't he sitting in front of a desk 9 to 5 and earning this amount? Because that's how we do it here. And you're going, dude, I'm having fun. And guess what? I'm making a lot of money and I'm really enjoying my life. And somebody's going to look at you and go, I have to tell you, his way looks a little better. I'm going to go try that.
That's exactly what it was. And at the beginning, everyone was telling me, oh, that online stuff, that's a scam. It's never going to work for you. Like, no point in putting effort and time and energy into it. And then slowly but surely, as my business started to improve and be more successful, then all of a sudden I got people asking me, hey, like, how are you doing this? Can you lend some of your expertise and like show me the ropes here? And I like, at first I was like all confused, and then I slowly started accepting it. But that's exactly it.
Yeah. Yesterday's fool is tomorrow's genius. Keep walking.
And there's always a path to continue on. And I'm in no way pretending that I have everything figured out or that I'm already there. But yes.
But see what you did. And a lot of people in your position will say, there are times when I'm waiting for somebody to find I'm a fraud. And that's not the truth. So you think you've got a little bit of imposter syndrome. No, you don't. You've got pioneer syndrome. Big difference. You don't have the answers, but you're willing to go and find them.
Yeah, that's much more accurate. And I did an episode previously on imposter syndrome, but that language reframe alone is huge.
Yeah, you are a pioneer.
Yeah, because that's also the way, that's more accurate. That's the way I think about it. Like, I might not have the answer yet, but I can find the answer and I will find the right answer.
Exactly. And that's what people look for. If you look at it in business too, I have tons of people who go, oh dear Lord, they're going to find me out. And I go, what are they going to find out? They're going to find out I don't have all the answers. Go tell them now you don't have all the answers, but you're willing to look. And they go, oh, good companies don't hire for what you can do. They hire for what you can do and what you may be able to figure out. That's what a good hiring company.
Well, Judy, this has been a blast and there's so much to cover here. I thought this would be a 20-minute conversation and it could easily stretch forever and ever. But if people want to connect with you, to work with you one-on-one or to pick up your new book, how do they go about that?
So let's start with a new book. That's an easy one. They go onto Amazon. It's Decoding Your Emotional Blueprint. And it's a nice practical book. It's going to teach them how to do some of the stuff that we spoke about. If they want to find me, they can find me on Instagram, Facebook, on my website at judywilkins-smith.com. They'll also find Constellations Meditations there. And if they want to really come and find out what this is, they join me at a live event. And those are also on my website. And in fact, in November 5 through 8, I will be doing Money DNA at Disney World.
Very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm excited. If I'm in Disney World, I'll swing by. And if not, I hope to see you at a different event somewhere around the country or world.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's start to wind down. And one of the questions I ask every guest is, if there was a burning of the books and you got to save the works of any three teachers, who would you choose and why?
Probably Og Mandino, because he was one of the first ones that I ever read that made my mind go, wow. He wrote Greatest Salesman in the World. John Randolph Price, who really started investigating super beings. And then, what would be my third one? Joe Dispenza. Joe Dispenza, who really helps in my work, because my work uses epigenetics and neuroscience. And Joe Dispenza also teaches you're a limitless being, which we absolutely are. Those would be the three I would save.
Yeah, especially that last one. He's the reason. He's the bridge between the scientific world and the spiritual world for a lot of people.
Yeah, and he's made my job a lot easier because this work is the same thing. It's the bridge between the one and the other. And his work has been super helpful.
We'll do a very quick rapid fire round now before we part ways.
Go for it.
What is one thing that you're currently researching these days?
What am I researching these days? More and more of the human potential and the limitlessness of using language to create transformation.
This is a bit of a curveball, but what is a $500 or less unusual device that's had a disproportionate positive impact in your life?
Two things, actually, oddly, ice packs. And I would say not a device, but certainly one of these supplements, NADs.
Oh.
Oh my goodness. Just huge. Really impressed.
Yeah. I've written a bit about the different NAD precursors, so that's cool here.
They're good.
Yeah. What is one thing that your tribe does not know about you?
Gosh, there are a couple. I would say a quirky one they don't know about me is I'm a chocolatier. An even quirkier one is that I'm a qualified international roller skating judge.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, how would you like to end our episode today? Are there any takeaways you hope listeners walk away with?
Yeah, absolutely. No matter where you are not stuck. You only think you are. You are an incredible, incredible being. If you know how to see it, start looking.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Gosh, it was fun. I could have gone hours.
Yeah. We'll have to do a round two at some point.
That'll be good. I will be there.
I'm Nick Urban here with Judy Wilkins-Smith signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.